Hi, Bomb Squad. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Radio Cherry Bomb is the number one female-focused food podcast in the country. Each week, we talk to the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. First, let's thank our sponsor, Hansenbrook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's secret to making rich, flavorful eggs is simple. The most possible space, the best possible feed, and lots of love. It's a healthy and humane recipe that makes your omelets, cakes, custards, and everything in between taste better. To learn more and to find their eggs, visit hansenbrookfarm.com. Today's episode is for all the small business owners and future entrepreneurs out there. Our guest is Michelle Mannix, the creator of Cookspace, a culinary studio in Brooklyn that features classes, private events, and more. In the first half of our show, Michelle talks about her two previous businesses, a bustling cafe called Ted & Honey and a catering company called Parker Red. She walks us through something we don't get to hear about very often, the entire life cycle of a business, from birth to death. A lot of you know that I own a small coffee shop in Brooklyn called Smith Canteen, so hearing Michelle's story was very emotional. The second half of our show is part interview, part therapy session. Suffice to say, this isn't our typical episode, and I hope you enjoy it. Before we get started, we're going to take a little break for a word from Hansenbrook Farm Pasture-Raised Organic Eggs. Hansenbrook Farm believes that organic and pastured is the way to go when it comes to eggs. Pasture-raised means better lives for hens, better lives for small farmers, and better eggs for you. It's also better for chefs who depend on rich, flavorful eggs. Hansenbrook Farm's own flock of amazing chefs, their mother hens, count on it. Inat Admini is a mother hen. She's also the celebrated chef behind Tayim, Balabusta, and Kish Kash in Manhattan. Want to learn how Chef Inat whips up a mini herb omelet with cilantro, parsley, and turmeric at home? Or maybe you'd like to make her red shakshuka, an aromatic, spicy tomato sauce into which she nestles eggs and lets them poach to perfection. You can find Chef Inat's Middle Eastern egg-centric recipes and videos on hansenbrookfarm.com. You can find Hansenbrook Farm organic pasture-raised eggs at Publix, Kroger, Sprouts Farmers Market, Fresh Direct, and many natural food stores across the country. Here's my conversation with Michelle Mannix. Let's start with what you're doing now, because you are doing a very cool thing right now.
Thank you.
You have a business called Cookspace.
Cookspace, yes.
Tell us about Cookspace.
Cookspace is a culinary studio. And we called it a studio on purpose because I wanted it to be similar to a yoga studio in the fact that you create a practice of cooking. And it's a recreational cooking school, for lack of a better word, private event space. And we teach people how to cook from confidence. And that's our primary mission, to build confidence in the kitchen so you can eventually let go of recipes.
Oh, I love that. Why did you think that was needed, that kind of cooking school?
What happened was when I closed Ted & Honey and Parker Red, which were a cafe that I had and an event space and catering company in the Navy Yard, in the process of sort of unraveling my life and figuring out what I was going to do with 10, 13 years, I don't even remember now, of real experience and skill in this field that was completely new to me at that point, I wasn't the chef, even though I'd gone to culinary school. And I didn't want to open another restaurant. So I really kind of said to myself, what do I have to say that's of any value? And usually when people have been around me in my home, they always say, like, you make it look so easy. You just throw things together. And I think I realized that, oh, it's not easy for other people. Why was that such an interest? It wasn't really about the end result. It was about the process of throwing it together. So that was like a little bit of an aha moment for me. And then in the what do I have to say kind of trajectory, I think like, oh, well, I'm really good at the visual aspect. You know, I used to have a catering company and would put such detail into even the muffins and the milk and how everything was set up, and that grew and took off. And I went to the bookstore and got some entertainment books and some cookbooks. And there was nothing wrong with those books, but I realized what they were missing was sort of the backstory, the goal, like really how to pull it together. And to me, I didn't think that that was out there. And I also felt that the way people cook in restaurants, and also like grandmas and people that really cook well, it's different than the way we're taught. And I feel like it's a disservice. I feel like we're kind of stuck in this hamster wheel of following instruction, painting by numbers, or just like outsourcing it. And I feel like the culture of food, which I love, you know, I love food magazines and recipes. I don't love taking pictures of my food, but the culture of food has sort of hijacked everyone's confidence. And it kind of made people feel like they need to have restaurant quality meals in their and I feel like nobody knew what to make for dinner anymore. And so it was like counter to what was needed.
Yeah. I do think there's something in the air, though, between what you're doing, Samin Nosrat's Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, which is really teaching people to cook more instinctually.
Yes.
And ask themselves, why is this dish not working?
Right.
Is it missing one of these four elements? Even, I haven't tried a lot of the meal kits.
Well, that was my second aha. I did Blue Apron, I think, for like a year because I convinced myself that I wanted more variety. And I say convinced myself because I realized that's not what I wanted and I don't think that's what people really want. And I had another aha moment because every time I did a Blue Apron meal, I was like, what's wrong? There's something off. My kitchen was always a mess. When I cook, it's never a mess. And it never tasted as good as I wanted it to because I wasn't in charge and I was stressed. And I'm usually in such a calm, meditative, flowy, enjoyed state when I cook that I'm like, that's what. And then I said to myself, no wonder why people don't cook. This is stressful. Yeah. This, because when, to me, it's the whole thing for me with cooking is that the reason why we promote cooking from confidence is not because, oh, then you can be all chefy and you can have great, that is great. You can develop your own culinary expression when you cook from confidence. But honestly, for me, the whole motivation was because of the joy that you get. You know, because we all make excuses as to why we can't cook. I don't have the right kitchen. I don't have the right stuff. I don't, you know.
But, time. I think time's a biggie.
Yeah, and you're not probably like my, that I hate that answer. Not saying yours, but every, I feel like in the culture, there's no other area of our lives where we say that. And everybody uses it like, I don't have time.
I say that
to
for
cook.
Working out. I say that for everything.
I guess.
I blame time for everything.
I feel like we have time. It's like what you prioritize. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. when, but I get it because if you don't have food in your house, you're not going to cook. If you don't know really how to cook in a way that's going to work for your lifestyle, you're not going to have the right foods. So it's just a vicious cycle of frustration, and I get it. But once you get into that place, I feel like you can cook a great meal in 30 minutes or less, not to sound like Rachel Ray right now,
but
you
can. No, it's totally true. I mean, that's why I think meal prep is such a genius trend, and I'm so happy to see it take off, because if you really can just find that chunk of time, you plan everything in advance, you know, you make things that are going to last you all week, you can eat really well, you know, you can save money, you can eat healthy, you can save time and all of that, but it's just committing to that Sunday or whatever.
It's making it a priority. Mm-hmm. And to me, mm-hmm. it's the most vital and basic form of self-care and how you show someone else and yourself love. So to me, I just feel like it's important. So that was the reason for doing it. And I wanted to show another way to access cooking. And I wanted to take the pretension out of it. I wanted to take the fear out of it and put fun back into it and make it feel like, I want to do that. I want to cook, you know, not just the end result, the plate, the finished product. Because I feel like we can't let the culture of convenience hijack our relationship to the food, because it's not just about what you eat. It impacts the food systems that you support, the environment, I mean, and taking care of oneself, you know, in doing research for this book proposal, which turned into a physical space instead of a book, and it still could turn into a book, hopefully, for anybody listening. Kidding.
No, don't say kidding. That's a good thing to put out into the universe. Who can take classes at Cookspace?
Anybody. We've had a four-year-old come to our pie-making class that was not intended for kids. Last week, a mom dropped her nine-year-old off for her fish butchery class. Oh. And we have grandmas. We have a variety. And it's been really interesting as a business owner to look at the demographic, because I thought it wouldn't be a lot of millennials, and we have a lot of millennials coming.
And you have a lot of cool guest instructors.
Yeah.
Some of our favorite
people.
We
share a lot of people that I noticed you had Katrina with the adaptogens.
Katrina Van Wyk.
She did a workshop that I attended and loved, and I've started incorporating them in my every other daily life. Yeah, we had Seamus Mullen do a class last week. We did a cooking and conversation class around mental health. And we had an instructor from the class by Taryn Toomey help lead the conversation. So we've done workshops. We have a kitchen collaging workshop. This artist that does these really interesting collages, and she's just going to lead. You know, I like to use the space as just a form of creativity. You know, we had a watercolor class because a lot of people like to paint still lifes, and it was just, there's a lot of light there. It's a beautiful studio. So it's a variety of classes. We do about 10 to 12 a month right now.
So cool.
Thank you.
All right. I need to take a class. I love classes. If I had if I had the time, I blame time on everything.
You do have the time.
I do want to talk about Ted and Honey.
Okay.
The business that you used to have, because you're very honest about what did work and what didn't work and
more so
and
now.
Why. More so now. You've had some time to reflect. So tell us, what was Ted and Honey?
Ted and Honey was a made-from-scratch cafe in Cobble Hill, and we opened in 2008, and the we was myself and my brother. And as you can probably relate, it's very challenging to work with a business partner, but let alone someone you're related to or sleeping with. But it was a lot of fun, and we kind of didn't really know what we were doing when we got into it, and it took off. But we made everything from scratch, and it was primarily focused around breakfast, and it was on Cobble Hill Park, and I loved almost every minute of it.
Yeah, it was a great space.
Thank you.
I didn't really live walking distance, but when we would go on road trips, we would always stop there, whether it was just like a day trip
out,
or a
yeah.
road trip on the way out, and because you just so many great things there, and you couldn't get things like that in the neighborhood at that time.
Yeah, my brother was really smart about creating. It's funny because we had these scones that people loved, and he would only make a certain amount every day, and I'd get so frustrated, and I'm like, people want them, and he's like, that's why, you know, you create this. And he even called our cookie like our signature cookie, things like that. It's like, it wasn't a signature. I mean, it was, I guess, but then it does create these things. You know, we had like insider things on the menu that we'd our tomato soup and grilled cheese that we like purposely wouldn't write on the menu after, you know, the first year because the regulars loved it. And like, I think it was because we forgot to put it on and somebody's like, what about that? And we had it. And then someone else passed it along as like the secret thing.
Well, you had no food service experience.
None.
Right?
Oh, well, not a lot. I didn't work. You know, I was like a hostess at Chi Chi's Mexican, like cheese ball restaurant. Sorry, Chi Chi's, in the 80s in high school. And then at a funky restaurant in Richmond for like a tiny stint after college.
In Richmond, Virginia?
Yeah, I'm from Virginia, kind of. My dad was in the military. We lived a bunch of places. But I had been laid off from my corporate job and went to a culinary school at the new school that doesn't exist anymore. And it was like an amateur 12-week program. And then I did it again as the chef instructor assistant. And then I got a job at Danny Meyer's restaurant in the Museum of Modern Art as a line cook with no experience whatsoever. And I remember going to work the first day, and I think it was like President's Day weekend. And I had done my trail in the prep kitchen, which wasn't stressful, you know, make a gallon of vinaigrette, something else with recipes, you know. And the first day on the line, I just assumed, and I was like really a big avid Danny Meyer fan and read the book and all this stuff. And the guy's training me next to me, and I think he's going to be with me the whole day. And then he's like, okay, you're good, right? And we had 400 covers that day, and I'd never worked in a restaurant. Oh. And they didn't even have tickets. So you had to call it back. You know,
a ticket is like literally a piece of paper that'll print out what the item
so,
is.
You had somebody expoing saying, I need a chicken, I need two fish, I need this, fire that, never having worked in it. And
oh, I have goosebumps just thinking about you in that kitchen.
And it was great. But what I realized is that I would just learn speed and accuracy, which I loved, but I wanted to cook. So I then went to the prep kitchen and worked there for a few months. And it was good training for Ted and Honey in a way, in terms of like feeding mass amounts of people and organizing and working with other people and getting experience working in a kitchen. But yeah, I had none. And my brother had been a chef, but he'd never owned a restaurant before. And yeah, we learned, like most people do, the real hard way.
Wow. How much money did you have to invest in getting it open?
We got $75,000 in like one day notice from my husband's company that he owned, but he had to come basically in on a Monday and tell his partners that he's going to open a cafe with his wife. And I convinced my brother to come, and we didn't even plan for any more money, and like scraped together nickels, spray painted things on our own, used yard sales. I mean, really kind of just pulled that place together, assuming when I spent the $75,000 on key money that everything was going to work.
Well, explain what key money
is. So key money in New York, and now there's a sophisticated term for it. I think it's called lease asset or something like that.
I didn't know that.
Back in the day, it was called key money. And you basically pay these kind of, I shouldn't say ridiculous, because when you're on the other side, you do put a lot of value in a place. So there's brokers that will arrange for people to go to pre-existing restaurants. And if you pay a flat fee, then you take advantage of all the equipment there, all the furniture, FF&E, which means furniture, fixtures, and equipment. And I didn't compare it, and the equipment was terrible. Nothing worked, and we had to replace half of it. So I would say maybe all in, I started with $100,000 at Ted and Honey, and then we started a company called Parker Red, which was a full-service catering division, simply from, I think in the early days, people would call and say, do you do catering? And my brother, I'd be like, do we do catering? Sure, yeah.
Right. We always say, no, we don't do catering because it's so complicated.
It is, but we actually turned it into almost $1 million business.
Wow.
In about 4 years. And then we ended up going into the Navy Yard. That was too early, in my opinion, for us. It just didn't work out.
You went to the Navy Yard because you needed a commercial kitchen?
Sort of. It was opportunistic. We'd started doing catering at Ted and Honey. People would call us and they went.
And you did it out of that space?
Yes.
Oh my God, that wasn't a big space.
We did a wedding one time and we'd had to close on a Saturday. I mean, our prep kitchen was small and the kitchen upstairs was teeny tiny.
Yeah. So what were you doing all this time from the point where you opened to what you just told us? What was your role?
Kind of a jack of all trades. I mean, in the beginning, I waited on every customer. I opened the front door. I would, you know, hire everybody. And then it took us about 3 years to get a real legitimate manager. And I think that was the time when we were developing Parker Red. And so that was I worked on the branding and hiring a catering manager because we had catering that just fell in our laps, order taking. But I realized in order to mine this, to realize this value, we had to put resources against it. So I became more of a, and that was good for my relationship with my brother because he went to that building and I stayed over at 264 and all of our goods were made there and brought back and forth. So my role was staff, happiness, operations, paying the bills, running to the bank to get quarters, cleaning the toilet.
It sounds like what I do.
Plunging.
At the canteen, yeah, you have to learn how to fix everything.
Yeah,
I mean, realized,
if you don't know what's going on in your business, it's really difficult to, I think, be a good manager and operator and connect with your customers. And I think people can feel that because people are looking to feel a certain way when they walk into spaces, like they're known or it's comfortable or it reminds them of something. And you're not able to do that just with the aesthetics or just with the food. It's a combination of so much, you know, and the people are a big part of that.
It's a formula.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why did you pull the plug on the whole thing?
Well, a year prior to, my brother decided to move.
Oh, that's
big. Yeah.
Okay.
And it was a real shock. We ran everything together. He was our chef, our catering business. We'd done Saturday Night Live's party. We'd done Sports Illustrated model party. I mean, like 1,000-person cocktail parties, weddings. It was a legitimate full business. And he came to me one day and said he was going to move to Charleston, South Carolina, and he gave me 3 weeks' notice. And
was he just so burnt out?
I think, like a lot of people, he were from the South originally. He realized that he had two small daughters. He just wanted a different lifestyle. And I literally was like, what the fuck am I going to do? And you know, like a lot of people, I surveyed a few people and a couple of people were like, close it. And I just said to myself, that's not how I go down. I'm going to like, and I got re-energized, you know, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this. This is going to be great. And I brought in an outside chef, and that was challenging because, as you can probably relate, the money going to someone that wasn't a partner, you know, you want that to even work even more. And I just realized that it had grown bigger too. At this point, we probably had 30 people between the two buildings, close to $2 million in like cash flow. I just say flow because it just
you weren't making
came
$2 million,
in and right. went right back out. Right. A van, equipment, 24-hour events. I just felt like a fireman constantly waiting for the alarm to go off. And as much as I loved it, I just wanted to do something different. And I didn't know what that was, but I was willing to take a risk. And I still miss Ted and Honey. It's very visceral. You know, I couldn't even walk down the alley for like 2 years. I went there every single day for 8 years. And I, you know, you watch families grow, you watch them fall apart, you witness life and you're part of
it. Start crying. But no, it's true. Like people come in and, you know, they're single and then they're together and then they
have a baby,
are pregnant, and then they have a dog and another baby. And, you know, you see you're part of this whole.
Yeah. And you see people
cycle of
die,
life. I'll let you talk so I can you see, cry in the corner.
Yeah. No, we had
here.
Old people come in that, you know, one day they don't come in anymore and you're like, oh, they died. I mean, it's terrible. Yeah. You know, like, but you really have a different relationship with people. And I lived here. Mm-hmm. It's my neighborhood.
Same.
So yeah. You feel, which is so special. You don't get that in New York. I feel like I live in a neighborhood. And for a while, I thought that it was like high school, that everybody knew each other and they just came to Ted and Honey every morning. Like, it felt like that. And even the New York Times, which was so great, they wrote about us. And it's the headline was like, it's the place where everybody feels like they, or I can't remember now. I'm like, the headline, and now I can't. But it did feel like that to me. And I realized now everybody doesn't know each other, but it had a good energy.
How did you even decide, like, okay, I just have to close this?
I don't remember the exact moment, but I'm sure it had to do with something breaking or the health department or just some moment, right. Some sort of reminder of, like, the frustration and just, I don't know the exact moment, but I remember seeing some email and it was like a cheesy name, like Restaurant Loot. And I called the guy. I'm like, what's the deal with this? And he said, I help people sell restaurants. I help people sell leases. I help put the value. And I said, let's just talk. Is there any commitment to this? And he said, there's no commitment. I take pictures of it. I try to hide any of the original markings. So even if I got you a buyer and you don't want to do it, you could. So I felt like I really had nothing to lose and why not? And at this point I did have debt. And I felt like it wasn't a sustainable thing for me. I felt like I was making everybody else happy. The neighborhood, my husband even, he went there every day. My staff, and I loved everybody. But at that point, I wanted to be a little bit more selfish and I wanted to do something different. And it took about 6 months because I also had to sell the other business simultaneously. Because if I closed Parker Red, that means I would literally have to add a whole nother human being to 264, which I'd finally gotten it cash flow positive with such discipline around the labor costs and the food cost. And it was just such an integrated thing. You know, we each unit fed each other and used the quote unquote left, you know, it was engineered in such a way. So I was able to sell both leases to two different people within 3 weeks of each other, but it took about 6 months. And the good news is, you know, I was able to sell them and bring down most of the debt and then have a blank canvas. But in terms of crying, I always used to say, you know, I'll mop the first floors here, I'll mop the last, sort of like just saying it. And I remember the last day, which, and I'm not a crier, mopping the floor, sobbing, sobbing.
I'm going to start crying again.
And then 2 days later, I walked by and somebody had put a piece of paper on the front door and the entire neighborhood, I'm going to cry, signed it saying how much they were going to miss us. And yeah, I was sad. And I still, you know, see people and they'll, I'll we smile and I can tell they're looking at, like, I'll get the double take. Like, I think I know her. And usually it's the glasses. And I, you know, I'm like, scone lady, latte person, you know, you have nicknames for people or you know what they ordered. And it's...
I'm sitting here bawling.
Sorry.
You know, I'll make it worse, I think it's so hard. I think it's just hard to hear because everybody told me just to close Smith Canteen. They're like, you're crazy. Even my accountant was like, just close it. You're not making any money. What are you doing? But
you're impacting a neighborhood is what you're doing. Yep. And I felt
but
that.
But so are you.
Yeah. And I felt sad to say goodbye to it. I really did because I miss it too. You know, it is hard in our neighborhood to watch Smith Street sort of just a little bit die in the vine. And, you know, we talked about it, but when you care about a neighborhood, you have to support its local businesses and you have to put your money where your value systems are. And New York is so special and it's special when you find places that you love and you get attached to the people there. And, you know, I had a staff that stayed with me. My executive sous chef at Parker Red started as my dishwasher the day I opened. You know, we had people that stay with us a long time. And so viscerally, it's also you're breaking up a family. I took people's jobs away from them. And I took, so it was very difficult. Yeah. You know, it was sad. And it was also PTSD that I didn't realize. You know, now I see it. But like the weather will change. And I instantly go to like, did I have enough prepped Arnold Palmers? Or like, and it's like a year later. And I still have a very physical relationship to like I can still see every corner. I can still remember the grid on the ice machine. Like you have a relationship with a building that is pretty powerful.
Hi everybody, it's Jess Zeidman, the associate producer of Radio Cherry Bomb. Thanks for listening to today's show. While Carrie takes a quick coffee break, I'm going to do a little housekeeping. Don't forget, our Jubilee conference is taking place on Sunday, April 7th. We've got an amazing day planned for everyone, so be sure to get your ticket. They're on sale right now at cherrybomb.com. Also, be sure to check out our new mini-series, The Future of Food. The series features talks and panels with dozens of women across the country. I've loved editing these episodes and getting to know these members of the Bomb Squad. You can find The Future of Food on cherrybomb.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to Kerrygold for supporting our tour. Now, let's go back to Carrie and Michelle.
Thanks, Jess. For the second part of the show, we turn the tables a bit and Michelle asks the questions. I don't know how good I was at answering, but Michelle gave me a lot to think about. Here we go. So she has written, it's a book of sorts. It's a workbook and it's called Seize Your Days. Prioritize and organize your next 12 weeks with deeper intention, purpose, and action. And for those of you who came to Cherry Bomb University, Michelle was one of our professors. Thank you very much.
I had a blast.
You did.
I loved it.
Good. I'm so happy to hear that. You are going to tell us a little bit about this book. It is for sale on
cookspacebrooklyn.com.
And you can also take
and maybe
classes
with Cherry Bomb one day.
Yes. We're talking about maybe doing something because I'm so
no
intrigued.
Pressure,
I'm so intrigued by this workbook. And you do classes based around the workbook.
I do. We have one next on March 4th. And I've done them at other people's offices. I've done them at Lead Dog. I did a little thing at for a small group at Goop in New York. And I love talking about this stuff, as you can tell.
So why did you decide to do this workbook?
For a number of reasons, but primarily because I literally had to pull myself back together and put my life back together. And I wanted some tools and some support. And what I mean by pull my life together, I closed my business at the age of 40, two businesses at the age of 46, and literally had no idea what I was going to do next and wanted to work and wanted to use these skills and wanted to be in this industry, but I wanted it to work for me. And through the slow process of other groups, I realized that to me, what was missing was the combination of our emotional life with the typical stuff you see in a planner and bringing people back to life in whatever way that looks like. You know, it's either like very self-help and very spiritual, or it's very business, or it's very about wellness. And so in the process of all the things I was doing, I kind of created this dorky printout. I would literally print out what I want to tackle this week and how do I want to feel and what's my priorities, because I had nobody. I almost wanted to, I was like creating my own boss, my own company, you know, like people around me, because I had gone from managing 30 people, hundreds of thousands of dollars and activity to nothing. You know, so it was like, and in the process of using it regularly, I didn't think about it, but a year later, I had done a book proposal, realized that nothing was going to happen from it, because I didn't know that unless you're an Instagram star, you have a really hard time convincing publishers that they should go with your idea. And luckily, Andy McNichol, who we both know, liked the idea and still was willing to pitch it with me having at that point like 27 people on Instagram or whatever. It's just not my big medium. I had done this talk at my husband's company at Lead Dog about reinventing myself. And it, as I said, I never even thought about it that way, reinventing myself. But in the process of putting together this talk and looking back at through so many things, I realized that so many unintentional things and intentional things really happened. And I really did manifest, for lack of a better word, very specific things. And I don't believe it would have happened unless I put things out there, not just in the universe, but on paper. And I broke it down and I really dug deep. And so I had always wanted to create a planner. I'm a big list junkie. I've always created lists. I mean, I write stupid things on my list, like take a shower. I love crossing things off lists. And also being a restaurant person, prep lists and pack out lists. And, you know, I love that kind of order. And I created a prototype of the planner and then just kept tweaking it and using it. And was able to launch a second version through Kickstarter. And
here we are.
Yeah. It's kind of like a lot of things. I mean, it's out of need. It's what I thought was missing. You know, people say, why'd you do certain things at Ted and Honey? And everything I did there was because I just wanted it. You know, I wanted a good egg sandwich and good matcha before it was really, you know, like one, at one point somebody came in and said, you used to do baby food. And I was like, oh yeah, our kids are grown now.
That's funny. All right. So you are going to walk me through a short exercise from this. I did not see any of these questions in advance, so I have no idea where this is going to go.
So
ready for the ride.
Yeah. You pointed out the title is called Seize Your Days. And the whole meaning behind that, I think, is that in order to seize your days, you have to size them up. And sizing it up is just to create awareness, because I don't know how you should live your life, but I know you do. And sometimes I feel like we're all kind of aware of what we need to do, but we're holding ourselves back. So this thing is just for 12 weeks intentionally, because I feel like when, for example, the beginning of the year, all the pressure to like new you, new me, new everything, it's so much. It's not sustainable to have put that much kind of pressure on big changes over a big time. So you're going to think about right now, it's February 15th. So for the next 12 weeks, between now and the next, and right before summer starts. So kind of a good time. It's not that great a weather. You know, you're still hibernating. What we're going to talk about is maybe some ways that you want to feel, your intention behind that, how you want to operate as a human being, as a boss, as a friend, maybe as a sister.
Oh my God, we're gonna do all this in 5 minutes.
No, I'm priming the pump.
Got it.
And some of the goals. So we might not do all of this because I'm gonna leave you with this book. But what you're gonna think about is, let me just do one exercise. And we could do rapid fire, because I know you're a rapid fire person. But just for a second, just like abandon thoughts of like should, would. If you were to really ask yourself how you wanted to feel, not a narrative or a story, but just like feel in general, in your mind and your heart, like what kind of words would you use?
In my mind, more organized.
And what about in your heart?
In my heart.
Or soul, or however you want to think about that.
Like the first thing that comes to mind is I want to have more time for the people who mean a lot to me.
That's a narrative.
Okay. Okay. That's not a feeling?
It's kind of a narrative about a feeling.
Okay.
But what you're really feeling, you want to feel connected.
I mean, I do feel connected.
You want to feel connected to people. Or you want to have time for the people.
I just want to have time for the people.
So maybe you want to feel present?
Yes.
Is that a better word for it?
Yeah.
How about your body? Your physical body?
Oh, I always feel like I need to be in better shape.
So you want to feel strong?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if strong is the word I would use.
How about vital?
Just
better shape. Okay.
Just even working out a little bit. Like I walk, but I just have never had a workout routine. And you and I are the same age. And as you get older, you're like, oh, I really should at this point have some kind of routine. So maybe just a little healthier, a little stronger, a little more in shape.
What about work?
Your Less. Role.
What about your role? Less How do you work. Want to feel in your role?
How do I want to feel
in your role in as a role founder and as a boss?
How do I want to feel?
By the way, this is a new way to do this. I've never done this where it's like asking people write it down.
Okay.
Or I do it like meditations around it.
I guess this goes back to more organized so that I will have more time. They'll see all these themes. Just keep the company going.
So I'm hearing organized.
You know what it is? The companies are so small.
You want to feel like a leader.
I want to feel like a leader.
Like an embodied leader.
I don't not feel like a leader. I think the problem
is... Well, it's not about not feeling that way. It's just sort of a reminder. Because sometimes it's things you're already feeling, but it's just like a reminder. Because the whole purpose of these questions is kind of like, when you think about these things, it's a good reminder just like going through your life.
Yeah.
If you say like, I want these things, because it goes back to the time question.
Right.
Because we all have it, but how do you prioritize the little that we have?
Because you know what it is, and you probably felt this way. Maybe you still do. When your companies are so small and you do so many things, every employee of your company does so many things when you're a small company.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's a generalist. Nobody's really a specialist. But because I'm the head of both of the companies and I do so many things, it causes too many bottlenecks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to solve in 2019.
So you want to be more efficient.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's totally good. At home, how do you want to feel? Like for me, I always use, I want to feel like beauty. I want to feel comfort. I want to feel relaxed, like a refuge.
I love my apartment, so I feel pretty good at home.
No, it's just a good reminder. It's not that you're not feeling that way. It's just awareness. Because then it almost makes you
really
look at your home differently.
I want a couch that's more comfortable. That's what I want at home.
With your family, your partner.
I love my home. So
your friends.
Yeah.
All those people. How do you want to feel with them? And by the way, the reason why we're talking about feeling so much, I should have prefaced this, is because we talked about Danielle Laporte, right? Earlier. Danielle Laporte is this woman that wrote a book called The Desire Map. And it's about making resolutions. And what she realized is that most people are looking for a feeling, not a thing. And so when you say to yourself, I want a new job, I want a new man, I want to work out, it's because you really probably don't necessarily want the shiny new object. You probably want the feeling associated with it. If somebody wants a new job, it's because something's lacking in the one they have. And it's usually not just a job, not just the money. It's that they want to feel valued or smarter or making a contribution. So that's the purpose of all these like feeling questions, because when you get around it and underneath it, it helps like illuminate more. So you can have a different relationship, I think, with things. And it's like becomes a little bit more of like a grounding tool, just like uncovering all these things, because they'll kind of hopefully create a little bit of a narrative for you. So I'll just do this last few, but like your lifestyle, your creative expression, how do you feel want to feel in that area of your life?
The same. I mean, I'm satisfied with that in that area of my life, I would say. Is that an answer?
No, it's not an answer because you have to identify it.
I want to feel, I mean,
because I think some people don't even, it's one thing. It's not about saying like, I'm good, I'm happy. Mm-hmm. It's not that. It's not, it's not looking for where we're unhappy.
Okay.
It's looking to get a little deeper and uncover it, because that helps you. When you say to yourself, I want to be more efficient at work, I want to have more time, I want to feel strong in my body. In my mind, I want clarity and presence. At home, I want to feel comfort and beauty, even though you already have all these things. Right. It's just good reminders because it also reminds you that you already are good. But if you start to veer off, it's like, these are things that I want to embody. This is important to me.
So creativity
it's like not forgetting that because everything else can then take hold of us. Email, this and that. I always say to people, email is someone else's to-do list. You know that, right? So if that's how you start your day, you're not making it a priority. That doesn't mean you avoid email. So we took a little inventory on some things you want to feel, and it's kind of maybe it's eliminating and all to be like, oh, those are some interesting things that I could be mindful of. But then you kind of move to, what is my real intention in these next 12 weeks of my life? What am I thinking about? What do I want to be? Do I want to feel better because last year it sucked? Am I embracing this new love? Am I like, so in this workshop, you kind of take a workbook, you take yourself through that. So, and I often ask people, I'm all about energy and vibes. It's like, what do you want to be vibrating to yourself, to the world? Because it's a good reminder to say to yourself, am I prioritizing the ability to bring that forward? Mm-hmm. And so if you were to ask yourself about an intention that you want to bring to your life between now and May 15th, you don't have to share it here, but you could jot it down in this planner here. And then what you do in the planner is you put it together and you're like, in 12 weeks, I want to feel and be and operating from this place. This is the type of person I want to be. Even if you already are that person, it's just like another reminder.
Well, that's a great point that you sometimes don't
give yourself.
It's always
credit.
Like what you're not.
Yeah.
It's not what you don't focus a lot on what you already are and what you are.
Or you focus on things that don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I say don't matter, if you've just identified some really soft, beautiful things, presence, creativity, grounding stuff, they aren't things that you have to get or do. They're all things that you can cultivate already. So it's like just literally make yourself feel better that from just awareness. For most people, I think you really just want to sometimes just feel a little bit differently, and that's enough. Like, why is that not enough? You know, because it impacts everything else. It's like the air thing on the airplane. Mm-hmm. Like, you're a better mom if you're happy. You're a better boss if you're fulfilled. All those things. But sometimes we leave all that and just worry about the emails or stuff that just doesn't kind of, as I like to say, move the needle. You know, sometimes I'm like working on things with Cookspace and it's like, that's not what's important right now. It's still important, but it can wait.
That's it for today's show. A huge thank you to Michelle Mannix for her honesty and for helping me seize my days. If you want to know more about her workbook and the companion class, check out cookspacebrooklyn.com. Thank you to Hanson Brook Farm for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. For more, visit hansonbrookfarm.com. Special thanks to our associate producer and our very own Riot Girl, Jess Zeidman. And thank you to the band Cha La La for our theme song. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks for listening, everyone. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hey there, I'm Nancy Pappas, and I'm a food illustrator living and working in Brooklyn. Do you want to know who I think is the bomb? Watt Sebrung of Rossum Treats. She's located off Orchard Street in Manhattan, and my favorite thing to eat there is her pie palette, specifically the sesame slice. Her desserts are raw, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, and soy-free, and 100% natural. Go visit her and check out her Instagram at Rossum Treats.